It is time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. With us this morning is Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet of the Millerton Veterinary Practice.
Good morning, Joe. Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning.
Oh, can you tell which was live and which was Memorex?
A little bit.
Okay.
I think that's a great idea to have that recorded so you don't have to remember all that.
Yeah, except that it's all of a piece. So I don't know when it stops.
You don't know when it ends.
Right. If I don't start with us today is, or you know, it's time for, then I'm just, well, you'll see. Watch the rest of the show go south. All right. The Fosters in Middletown. Is there any harm in worm? Let's try this again. Is there any harm in worming a dog if you are not sure it has worms? I dimly recall in the olden days they used to worm dogs every so often as a matter of course. We recently got a flea infestation under control, but now we are worried about the after effects on our three dogs. It would certainly save a trip to the vet's office with three separate fecal samples if we could just give them all a dose. The Fosters in Middletown.
Well, in regard to the flea infestation, fleas are carriers of tapeworms. So the most worrisome situation would be potentially tapeworms. The problem with just deworming is that there's no dewormer that gets everything. And so the Dronsit would be the drug that gets praziquantel is what it's called, that takes care of tapeworms. And so it would absolutely not be contraindicated after a flea infestation is under control to treat all three of your dogs with Dronsit. If you were to treat with something that would also kill roundworms, hookworms, and whipworms, which are not carried by fleas, and if you have three large dogs, then the cost would be pretty high if you're, if in fact your dogs don't have worms. So, you know, you have to weigh the pros and cons. So it certainly wouldn't be contraindicated, but is it really necessary to do? So tapeworms are fairly benign parasites. And when you bring in a stool sample, we rarely actually find the eggs in the stool from tapeworms because their strategy for spreading themselves is to break off little segments that crawl out. So they're crawling, or they're coming out the anus, and they're in the hair around that area, or they might drop off, and you'll see them in the bedding. Excuse me. And so,
and they're the ones that look like rice, right?
They can. There are two different kinds of tapeworms, one that it has the intermediate host of the flea and one that has the intermediate host of a rodent. And they both kind of look like little dried pieces of rice, and they're yellow. They're sort of off-white to yellowish in color, and you will see them on your dog, most likely, or in the environment. Sometimes you do see them before they dry up, and they're a little creepy-crawly. They do move. They lengthen and shorten. But in any case, when you see them, it's fine to go ahead then and deworm. I certainly would tell you that if you had a flea infestation and you found tapeworms on one of your dogs, deworming all three, yes, absolutely.
But if you didn't find any?
But if you haven't found any, it may or may not be necessary to do.
Is it just really, this is so, thank you very much. Who was that, Django?
That was Django. He'd like to come back into the bedroom.
Okay, well, tell Django, ask Django if, just from a really, like, civilian standpoint, if it's a push, like, what's the percentage? If you don't see them, are you, 70%? If money's an object, how does a normal person make that decision?
So I would treat tapeworms based on when you see them.
Okay.
However, that being said, that I don't think we check dogs often enough. So the other types of worms, which I was going to go into, I know I'm going into a much longer
It's okay. We love worms.
Okay. The other types of worms are, you know, they're all over the place. The eggs are in the stool. Our dogs' noses are all over the place. Right. They just lick the nose. They pick up parasites. Some of these parasites are transmissible to people through the feces. Obviously, we're not usually picking up feces with our hands, et cetera, but they could potentially be on the dog. They could be in your dog's mouth. So to check a stool sample twice a year is never contraindicated. I think it's a good idea to check a fresh stool sample for parasite eggs at least twice a year.
All right. Can I interrupt for 1 second? Because obviously in New York and other places where you're reaching down with like you're picking up your dog's poop, you know, every day.
Right.
And you're coming up here. And by the way, I am all for checking your dog's stool at the vet. I will say that there was a mobile vet who shall remain nameless, who I believe charged $75 for a fecal sample. Is that about?
No.
Okay.
Because
that was just. Okay, because that would be the sort of thing that would, as the saying goes, you know, choke a horse in terms of a budget.
Right, right. Yes. But what you're doing is you're giving, you know, when you're deworming, you're giving your dog a chemical, a drug.
Right.
And so, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you want to do it based on some reason.
Yeah.
So either you're catching them eating rodents or, you know, or they're big hunters or they're eating birds or something like that. And, or you bring in a stool sample and we find something. Or they might be losing weight, so some indication that your veterinarian wants to deworm them. But just going ahead and deworming all of your pets may not be necessary. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, might be contraindicated. It depends on.
It's kind of giving your kid. You know, I just learned something today, and I'm still in shock from it. You've perhaps heard of it, but I know someone who is going to kindergarten in a peanut-free zone.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, there can be no peanut butter and jelly in the school.
Yeah, that's been going. I mean, that's not uncommon.
I'm old. I mean, I just like
you are old.
I miss that.
People, I think, are children are getting maybe children are getting more peanut butter allergies. I don't know, but that was the case. I mean, peanut butter free schools are not unheard of.
No, peanut free. Yeah, peanut free zone.
Peanut free. Yeah.
I would have liked to be the person they called to design that.
Yeah, you know, children can have really severe anaphylactic reaction. Yeah,
And I just think that it's important to, you know, for everybody, like while you're aware of that, you've also got to sort of be practical and live. So
I
just go back to my city things. Like if your dog is running around a dog park and sniffing everybody's butts and so forth, and then you turn around and the dog's got loose stool or is a little funky, you know, then you go look for this.
Yes.
And in country life, it's slightly different, but they've still got all sorts of things to sniff.
Right.
Nose.
Or if you have, you know, if you've got small children,
right.
Not a bad idea. If you've got small children, multiple dogs, check those stool samples from each individual a couple of times a year at least.
Okay. All right, Yoshi in Jersey City. My little Aussie Shepherd mix was just diagnosed with seasonal allergies. My vet gave her antibiotics for the sores on her skin and pills to block her itch receptors. That's 2 pills twice daily. I think we've got a theme here. He said it was probably pollen, but specific testing would be costly. I'm thinking pollen is an ongoing situation. She's only 3 years old now, and I don't like the idea of having to give her 4 pills a day every day, all summer, for the rest of her life. Is there a way to prevent allergies via, say, homeopathy or acupuncture? If not, is there any way to treat them with alternative modalities?
So that's the million-dollar question. And it is not there's not a simple answer to that. The simplest thing that I can say is that you can decrease the inflammation. So most people are concerned with the level of itching that their pets are doing. Sometimes there's hair loss as well, there's a cosmetic aspect to it. But most of the time, it's because your pet is just scratching like mad, and that is because of the inflammation in the skin that's caused by this hypersensitivity reaction to pollens, all kinds of pollens potentially. So if you can lower the level of inflammation in your pet's body, then you should be able to lower the level of itch in your pet's body. And depending on what they are hypersensitive to, or how much that immune system is geared up, then they would have less of a tendency to become hypersensitive to new things, and the itch may be cut in half just by keeping the rest of the body's inflammation low. So the things that we know about inflammation have probably more to do with, have a lot to do with the diet and the environment.
Also, so, I'm so sorry, it also true in humans, I'm just thinking, you know how pregnant, you know how bodies change during the summer, during, or at least I might be projecting, but I know sometimes people are stuffier during certain times of year, and bodies are more inflamed during certain times of year. Yes, no, maybe?
Yes. Okay. Well, yes, and some of that has to do with the diet.
Right. Yeah. I would just say human and canine, feline.
Mm-hmm.
I would think, because...
To target the question, I think talking to a veterinarian who does holistic medicine would be the way to start. So you can affect the, absolutely you can treat with homeopathy. I am not versed in classical homeopathy, so I couldn't tell you more about the specifics of that. Acupuncture, you can affect the immune system response to things with acupuncture. Unfortunately, and I think that you're asking the right question at the right time when your dog's 3 years old, because the dogs that I treat, unfortunately, typically I'm the last person that they see. They've been to everybody else, and so they've been dealing with allergies and have no hair, and they're 15 years old, and now we have to work on, you know, or 12 years old or 10 years old. We have to work on these.
You've got to restore something that
yeah, so now is the time to think about, what do I do with my dog's diet? When are they most itchy? Why are they having such a hypersensitivity reaction? Why is the immune system geared up? You know, part of that may be environmental toxins. Definitely wiping the pollens down, so rinsing your dog off with cool water a couple of times a day is something that may help. It's not going to help with the pollens that they're breathing in, but with the contact allergies. And going on putting them on an anti-inflammatory type diet would be something to consider.
And how do you deal with the very human and scientific, so that should cover both the patients and their doctors, who want to, do you need to know what pollen it is? Or can you...
Not with holistic treatment, no.
Okay.
You don't. But if all else fails, then finding out what their hypersensitivities are and trying to desensitize the immune system certainly is a possibility. And the testing itself isn't cost prohibitive, I don't believe. But you're talking about probably $300 to $400 for the testing, and it usually includes your first bottle of hyposensitizing medication. But it is injections. Well, you can actually do an oral now. You can do a daily oral, and that may even, there's some evidence that might even work better. Think homeopathy.
Right.
Here we are giving a small amount of something.
Right.
And making you less responsive.
Which is the basis, and then again, this is just something, for anyone who doesn't know this, and it's really hard because it's like, I've been exposed to homeopathy for so long that it doesn't occur to me that there are people who don't know, for example, what a homeopathic is, except that there are way more people don't know about homeopathy than do. And so that's just something, you know, if you're a random listener and you're going, it might be worth finding out about, because that has to do with dealing with very, as you say, with allergies, dealing with very small amounts of and stimulating a physical response to it and perhaps neutralizing it. And I guess the reason that I know about it is because a friend's daughter, and this was almost half a century ago, had a milk allergy. The girl basically couldn't leave the house. She was so miserable. And because one of her parents was French, when she went to see her French cousins, they took her to a homeopath, and bingo. life changed. But that was the only reason. If you're not exposed to it, you don't necessarily come across it.
True, yeah. And unfortunately, there aren't very many veterinarians who actually practice homeopathy because it is, it is a lot of communication and not a lot of...
Right.
It's a whole different type of medicine. So you need to, you need to do lots of communicating and not as much drug taking, and so it's difficult to make a living doing that, and it's hard to have people to get clients who have the patience for it. And so there are really only a few veterinary homeopaths around, and those are very specific about the patients that they'll take on.
Totally understand. I'm just going with Yoshi's question here because it's a smart time, and perhaps there is a as things change just generationally. I'm hopeful that there's going to be more of a. The first question was back in the olden days, and ideally, as we move into the newen days, you're going to have a balance between. A balance between wellness, and maintaining wellness, but then also responding to acute conditions. So,
yes, and I have to say, if the millennials, if I'm allowed to use that term, are much better versed in number one, taking care of themselves at an earlier stage, and hence their pets, and also they're better educated about. The possibilities and thinking about what can I do that isn't drug related that's going to stem this before it becomes a huge issue. It's a delight to be able to work with people like that who are thinking similarly with their pets.
Right, and it used to be a very cutting edge thought that like, all right, is there some way to do this without giving them something that's so toxic that it's going to create its own problems? And there's definitely been improvement along those lines. So long short, Yoshi should find
a veterinarian who practices holistic medicine.
Yeah.
The American Holistic Veterinary Medical Society website, even the AVMA, which is the American Veterinary Medical Association. I think they may now have. They certainly have listings of people who practice alternative modalities. So you should be able to find somebody online.
All right. That seems fair. Now, how are you on rats?
I'm fine on rats. It depends on the question.
I'm bad on rats.
I love rats, but I don't practice on them. Sometimes even once a year. So I will try to help if you throw out that question.
We have a rat question from Kaylee in Pine Plains. My one-year-old male rat, Junior, has red inflamed-looking eyes. Okay, I used to think that rats always had red eyes, but never mind. There's been a lot of construction dust in our house lately because we are renovating, and I'm pretty sure that's the cause. Is there a home remedy I can use on Junior's eyes?
So this is an easy rat question.
It is?
Yeah, so they do get conjunctivitis from either bacterial infection or they can get it from irritants that are in the air. So that's what it sounds like for this guy. And so doing an eye rinse would be helpful a couple of times a day. You can use a human eye wash that you can get from over the counter from the pharmacy. Not the stuff that you soak your contacts in, but an eye wash. And put a couple of drops in. A couple of times a day to at least wash out those irritants should help over time. Rats can even get red eyes like that from the ammonia smell if they're in a small space and they're with a bunch of other rats just from the litter and the ammonia smell. So they do have sensitive little conjunctivae.
Can they get little rat glasses?
Rat what?
Little rat glasses, little rat goggles.
That's a possibility. I think that they would have trouble keeping them on those little heads.
You secure them.
Yeah.
But maybe a little rat elastic.
Put a strap behind the ear.
Yeah. Oh, I've got three different business ideas. This is one great thing about doing Ask a Vet questions.
Okay.
I always get new ideas. All right. So without goggles, what do you do?
Right. So without goggles, sort of to prevent it, yeah, just try to keep them out of the area of construction. But otherwise, just rinse those eyes 2-3 times a day.
Okay. And is this someplace where an eyedropper would come in handy, or do you just do like...
You should be able to just turn that bottle upside down and put the drops in.
Okay.
But you could use an eyedropper.
Well, no, I'm wondering, because one of the most diabolical medicines ever invented is ointment for dog's eyes. I don't know if you know this as a veterinary. I've always wondered if the, like focus groups, if veterinary testers, you know, because whereas eye wash and you can just turn something easy for a dog and their eyes. Ointment where you're supposed to put a little bit just on the this and this and have it melt, it's never been something that...
it's very easy for people who do it every day. But typically what I do is with that ointment or the drops, I go out and get the bottle and I show, and I put the first dose in. So I show people how to do it. So I don't just send it home, and I'm also not expecting people to do it if I can't get it done.
Okay, well, I think that's really good, but any one of your children will say that you can do anything, and that doesn't necessarily mean that anyone else can.
But I'm also speaking strategies, so this is what I do. I come over the top of her head, because then she doesn't see me coming. Dogs are pretty good about eye ointment.
Dogs are fine. Well, except for my dogs, but that's all right.
Cats are a little bit more difficult. But you can put that, they don't have the same eye fear that we have, and so you can put that ointment right across their eye, squish the lids together, and there you're done.
I'll be over.
Okay.
All right, Andrew in Torrington. I just started a job with animal control, and I'm touching a lot of stray cats and dogs. Is mange communicable to people, and if so, how exactly? How do you know if you've got it? How do you recognize it on a dog or a cat? And are latex gloves enough protection?
So mange, sarcoptic mange is caused by a mite in dogs and cats and wildlife, and it is transmissible to people upon close contact. So using latex gloves should be enough, but it depends on how you're moving these animals around, as animal control, they're actually having to pick them up. I would think that they would be picking them up with leather gloves, because it's more of a worry with rabies. And I'm sure that animal control people are vaccinated against rabies, but nevertheless, you're not sure who's going to bite you. But if it's true, if you come at a cat or a dog with leather gloves, they're afraid. So the latex gloves will help as far as the hands go. The mites can live in the bedding of the dog, the hair of the dog. So you have to be careful about where you're finding these animals and traipsing around. But just picking them up, typically if they're going to touch your arm, it's not going to the latex isn't going to protect you. So if they look pretty mangy and they're scratching, dogs and cats with sarcoptic mange are distracted by it, and so because it is so itchy, so even in the presence of an animal control officer, you may see them scratch and you may notice that they are missing a lot of hair, in which case I would try to use something to cover your arm. So a long sleeve shirt and latex gloves would work to protect your arms. Now, that being said, my understanding is that people who get sarcoptic mange, it's quite itchy, but it tends to be self-limiting. So that type of mange mite prefers an animal to a person.
Okay.
Yeah, so you get a little bit. I've seen people with a little papular rash on their, some bumps on the insides of their arms.
But that's about the size of it.
Pardon?
But that's about the size of it.
Yeah, and some redness. But so you'd have to go see the doctor to get rid of that. But my understanding is that, it's different than the human mange, which we rarely, I don't think we see it anymore. It has to do with certain living conditions that aren't very healthy. And that human mange, you can get all over you. But this dog and cat mange from stray animals is preventable by just protecting your skin and staying away from bedding, leaving everything right there. If you're taking a cat out of someone else's home, don't bring their stuff.
Dr. Cannon, you are amazing, and we thank you very much.
Thank you.
This
is my pleasure.
This has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com.